freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Welcome back, everyone, to Patriot Coalition Live. I'm Matthew Nugent.
And I'm Jason Marocek.
Thanks for joining us today. Our goal is to create a timeless resource to teach about the U.S. Constitution and the proper role of government, the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage, and how to defend against threats to our republic. Folks, we want to engage members of our armed forces, veterans, first responders, and the patriots who support them in their noble professions. Weekly episodes are available Tuesday mornings wherever you get your podcast, places like Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or you can find us at patriotcoalitionlive.com. Also, your support is important to us. Please support us at patriotcoalitionlive.com/support. Okay, are you all ready?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's do this. Okay, today's episode, we're talking with you about vaccines. It's a special episode, okay? Both vaccines in general and the COVID vaccine, because it's what's in the news right now. And really, hopefully we'll do something that does this subject well, that it can be used 10, 20, 30 years from now. Okay, first of all, Jason and I, we are not anti-vaxxers. We are not anti-vaccine people.
No, not at all. In fact, we were put on this earth with, our own liberty, right? God created us each with to be able to express ourselves how we want. We have taken that, as we talked in previous episodes, you know, people are not allowed to do anything to us without our permission, right? And, that's right. Of course, a jury of our peer selves otherwise. And so what I do with my body, what Matt does with his body, what anybody injects in their body is completely and should be up to them. In addition, our kids have been given to us. They were a blessing, and we have been given the blessing of raising them how we see fit to make sure that, we can teach them with our values and principles. And so no one else should be able to tell us what we have to put into our children. That is that's completely up to the individual and the parents. Again, going back to our, it's important that we understand that this liberty that we have is given to us by God, and no one can take away our life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And so we have to remember that. Neither Matt nor I are doctors, but we do read. We read quite a bit. It doesn't take a whole lot other than that to be able to get up to speed on an issue. So
that's right. And Jason and I share the same thoughts on vaccines in general, and I couldn't say it any better than you did, Jason. Thanks. Now, I do have a background in pharmaceutical sales, actually about 10 years in the pharmaceutical sales industry. I haven't necessarily sold vaccines, but I've sold a lot of other different medicines, from cardiovascular care, anti-infectious disease care, or anti-infectious, medications, what have you, about a dozen different medicines to NICU providers, to nurses, to, cardiac surgeons. I mean, a lot of different providers, okay? So I have a lot of experience reading studies and influencing people, providers and nurses, nurse practitioners, and their prescribing habits. And
yeah, I'll throw this in here too. I didn't realize until I started working for a global medical device manufacturer the impact and the influence that sales reps, we think of a sales rep as, hey, they're just hawking their wares, they open a suitcase and whatnot. But I didn't understand that the sales reps are actually the ones that teach the physicians how to use whatever therapy that they are selling, whether it's a medicine, a medical device, or anything like that. So, in the military, we think of the train the trainer. Well, the sales reps are training, are the trainers, right? And not only that, but they're training the trainers to teach the physicians. So I wanted, before we got too far into this, I wanted to make sure that people understood that you being a sales rep for pharmaceutical sales means that you bring a lot of experience and knowledge to this topic.
Thank you, Jason. And he's right. Doctors have so much to learn just to get to their first day of work. And they don't really have time to learn all these new medications. So it gives us an opportunity. And I'm bringing to you all a little about the process, how we approach a medicine. In this context, it's the context of vaccines. Now, the providers that give the most vaccines are pediatricians. And one provider, a leading provider in Pinehurst, North Carolina, if you ever hear this, you know I'm talking to you. I said, doctor, in your opinion, what have been three of the most important medical innovations in all of history? I mean, what could it be? And he said, oh, that's easy. Hand washing, the flush toilet. That made me chuckle, you know, because he's a very proper doctor. And he said, vaccines. So hand washing, basically sanitation, the toilet, toilet, and vaccines. And I thought, well, that's interesting. So vaccines are important. Now, my wife and I do take the time to learn about vaccines. Our children have gotten most recommended, but not all, for different reasons, okay? So with that in mind, whenever you look at medicine, it's always, you know, how they organize the data and present it to you, you have to understand statistics, okay? Now, on my first day of statistics class, it's called actually probability and statistics. My professor, a proud alumnus of the University of Tennessee, if there are any Tennessee Vols out there, I know you're probably, you know, shouting, hooting and hollering, you know, he was very proud and he should be. He quoted Mark Twain and he said, there are three types of lies. Of course, he said it with a thick Tennessee accent. He goes, three types of lies. Lies, damn lies, and statistics. So if you don't understand that in statistics, you can make any set of numbers look any way to tell your story. And if you don't understand statistics, you can be fooled.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of, I read in a book somewhere, and I don't even remember where I read it, but the line went something like, you know, a statistics can make the truth dance a jig. And I thought that was clever. You know, you can make the truth do pretty much anything you want to if you look at it from a different perspective, and statistics help you do that.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely. There are many Far Side comics that tell that story. But our goal is to emphasize in this podcast episode is that taking a vaccine should be your choice, and the same for your children. It should be your choice because they're, you know, obviously minors. And our goal is also to help us all to avoid the situation where the government or a school or an employer or a business is forcing any of us. And that word force, there are many synonyms. There's compel, coerce, someone to take a vaccine, and now the COVID vaccine, okay? So we're also gonna give you some recommendations on what to do to prevent the situation, or if we can't prevent it, what to do if it gets to that situation where vaccines are being forced on us or we're being compelled to use a vaccine. Okay, let's start with why vaccines are important in the first place, okay? I already quoted that physician, you know, vaccines are one of the three great lifesavers in history, and it's true. Now, let's go back to polio. Pretty much everyone has heard of polio. If you know who FDR is, he was our first and last paraplegic president. Okay, as a child, he swam in a lake and he got polio from that and was paralyzed. Okay, so now going back to some data, 1952 in America. Okay, that year, 1952, 57,628 people got polio, 57,000 and change. Okay, of those 57,000, 3,145 died, okay, from polio. That's not with polio. That's from polio. That's about 5.5% death. Okay, now, 21,269 of those had lifelong paralysis of varying degree from polio. Put together, that's about 42.5%. of someone in that day of either dying or being, you know, having a lifelong paralysis from polio. And most of the victims were children. That is truly terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Now, completely different perspective than what we have today.
It's totally different. I mean, even the numbers, you know, the statistics Jason talks about, you can make the numbers dance a jig. I don't know if I quoted you correctly, but almost as good as Mark Twain. But even the spun numbers, you know, 96%, you know, only a 96% chance of, you know, surviving. Okay. Nowadays, it's like 99%, 0.99, you know, survival rate. But back then, it was truly terrifying. Okay. So there was a place for vaccines there. Now, here are some recent, relatively recent COVID survival rates. Okay. And this is from the CDC, Centers for Disease Control. And this was posted September 23rd, 2020. And right now it's December 6th, 2020. Okay. So as every month matters, because we know how to treat, we the physicians, providers, rather, the medical community, know how to treat COVID better. And the mortality rates decrease, and the time that it takes for someone to become, you know, healthy between the time they are diagnosed, it becomes shorter. So we're getting better. So this is from a couple months ago, about 2.5 months ago. So it's kind of old data, but it still pretty shows pretty good, okay? This is from the CDC. It's a summary from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, okay? From ages 0 to 19, the survival rate is 99.997%. From ages 20 to 49, the survival rate is 99.98%. The survival rate from 50 to 69 is 99.5%. Survival rate from 70 plus is 94.6%.
And so Matt, and these statistics, again, dancing a jig, these statistics include those who died of something else, but maybe had COVID at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it also includes people with comorbidities, like, you know, hypertension or diabetes or something like that. So these are almost the worst case scenarios. If you were to extract that, it gets even better, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, nowadays, if you died with COVID, I mean, literally, if someone gets in a bike motorcycle accident and they die and they've got COVID, they're in the bucket of you died from COVID. So, and that's where statistics can play in too. But either way, the survival rate, having caught COVID or gotten the virus, are still very high. In fact, statistically, it is more likely that a male under the age of 30 will die in a car accident than die from COVID. So that's why you have to know these numbers, okay? So question, should you take the COVID vaccine? Now, here is kind of an approach when you ask yourself, and if you haven't already had this discussion with your friends or on social media, these are four great questions to ask. Okay, so get your pen and paper ready. All right, number one, am I a high risk category? Okay, as you can tell, if you can see this on video, I'm a robust 25-year-old. I'm not. I'm holding 25. I'm in my 40s somewhere. Holding steady, man. So I am not in a high risk category. I thank God I don't have any, you know, comorbidities, you know, or what have you. So I am absolutely, and the same with Jason, you know, he's 24. You're younger than I. So number one, risk category. Number two, how well does the vaccine work? Okay. We've heard one so far claim greater than 90% success, and that's a Pfizer vaccine. Okay. Which has been approved in the UK, but not yet in the United States. Next, okay, so two is how well the vaccine works. Number three is statistical significance. It's a mouthful. What another way to say it, does it get consistent results, okay? Because if a study has, say, 200 people in, and it worked effectively in that group on 90%, it's very difficult to extrapolate results from a 200 person N equals 12 group to, say, 100 million people in the United States, okay? So in terms of the consistent performance, you know, will I get at least 90%? We need to know more about the data. We need real life results, okay? So, and that's why having a really only a few months period of time for testing is, it's kind of scary, okay? So that's the third.
Ideal, for sure.
It's definitely not ideal, okay? And the fourth thing is side effects, okay? Listen, guys, every single drug, even baby aspirin, has a side effect, okay? There's never been a drug that I know of that doesn't have a side effect. Every provider, if you've ever watched a show and they get these, you know, beautiful people on TV, they're happy, they take this drug, it could be for anything, you know, but they're happy or having, okay. And there's always a disclaimer that says, you know, can have these effects,
where half the screen knows. On the television is full of like 0.2 font disclaimers.
Yeah. And I've had good friends come up to me, you know, they know I was in pharmacy. Matt, what is going on here, man? I said, listen, every single drug or vaccine they all have side effects. And that's why you've got to read yourself, okay? You ask your provider. And most of the providers, they know if you have a major comorbidity, diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia. Those are the three amigos in internal medicine, hypertension, cholesterol, and diabetes. Those are the three, okay? So once again, those four categories, one, risk category. Number two, how well the vaccine works. Three, consistent results or statistical significance. And the fourth, side effect profile, okay? So in terms of a side effect profile, if in the chance of my survival rate of COVID, and I actually had it earlier this year, is 99.997%, I think, okay? Now, if the chance of someone getting a side effect from a vaccine is 1%, that's about 300 times the chance of me dying. I mean, you could weigh that death versus a serious side effect. Okay, I'm just not going to take the vaccine, and that's just one reason, okay? But that is your decision to make. It should be your decision to make for you and right. for your children, okay? So you got to weigh those together. Next, and if you scale that up, and there are 100 million people in the United States, and there is actually typically, I've seen, you know, 3% of side effects on upward of 12% of side effects on just about any drug. Okay, now, what the difference is, kind of the bell curve, is the severity of the side effects. Let's just say, and I haven't read all the studies, okay, 1% of serious or semi-serious side effects, okay? So if 100 million people in the United States take some sort of COVID vaccine and only 1%, okay, it's not hard math here, that's 1 million people, okay? What are we talking about here? I mean, in England, there was a request for proposal put out, or RFP in contracting terms, for they were looking for a company who could develop software to track side effects from the vaccines that are going to be used in England and throughout Europe. So people who work in that arena, medical, they expect that. Similarly, you are now, you know, you're now knowledgeable, so you can say, well, what's the side effect profile look like? What's the N value? How many people were in this study? And it's in there. It takes a little while to get used to, but you can do it, okay? So here's something also to consider, okay, that pharmaceutical companies in the United States in 1986, okay, were given kind of a pass. They will no longer be held accountable for any side effects that their vaccine causes. I'll say that again. In 1986, the government wrote into law pharmaceutical companies who manufacture vaccines, not other drugs necessarily, but specifically vaccines, were told, and it is law, they will not be held accountable for side effects up to including death.
Yeah.
From a vaccine. In fact, there's a chart that shows that pre-1986, there were about 23 different doses of recommended vaccines. By 2019, there were 73 doses to cover 234 viral and bacterial strains. It's gotten out of control, in my opinion. Okay. So you can't sue the pharmaceutical companies because the government allows them through and the FDA allows them through. So a lot of the decision of what happens, it's on you. So what happens if you give it to your child, maybe their age 12, 11, 13, what have you, and they have a serious side effect? What kind of recourse is there? They might maybe pay for the care. None. It is not required.
And if you think about it, you think about the government giving immunity, in a sense, to pharmaceutical yep. companies for any side effects that come out of their drug. Does that make a company that is pursuing a profit more or less likely to cut corners, to maybe say it's not a big a deal, or to get in a situation where they say, well, the greater good is to get this out faster, right? Sound familiar? Does it make it more or less likely for them to produce a drug that ultimately can have side effects? Because what happens if they do have side effects? Well, better luck next time, right?
That's right. There's nothing. And it's natural human nature to want to be the first to market. And it's so mistakes will happen. Am I implying or attempted to imply that all pharmaceutical companies are bad? No. Are there bad people everywhere? Yes. Okay. By giving them, you know, immunity, borrowing Jason's word, it makes it easier for mistakes to happen and it not be accounted for. So here's another new aspect, which I've never heard of or seen before, of a type of vaccine. It's called messenger RNA, little M, big R, big N, big A. It's a messenger ribonucleic acid. And on the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, at least two of those, okay, of two of the vaccines that are called candidates, it's a new type of delivery system, or not delivery system, but a mechanism of action, if you will. So there could be, you know, long-term effects. We don't know. People have talked about, is it changing my DNA? Some say yes, some say no, but I'd like to see more data, okay? And even then, our recommendation is go to a non-big tech source. Google, some stuff, people said used to say, you can find anything on Google. No, you can't. Go to DuckDuckGo. Let's see, what's another good search engine, Jason?
I use DuckDuckGo, so I don't really use any of the other ones.
Yahoo is one, but I've found things on Yahoo and DuckDuckGo that conservative related that you cannot find on Google. So when you do your search, DuckDuckGo or Yahoo are a couple places you can go. All right, so
And wasn't there a study out of Israel or a doctor that was interviewed in Israel that had something to say?
Yes,
about that?
Thank you for bringing that up. There was a study, and bottom line, that this doctor from Israel said, yes, there are risks we have to consider, and there are long-term effects. So it's kind of a risk-reward thing.
He was talking specifically about the messenger RNA, right, in that study? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, just to kind of, again, to catch everyone up and to repackage this, you know, when we make our decision about whether or not each of us decides for ourselves if we're going to take a vaccine or give our kids a vaccine, we want to look at, you know, what our risk is of getting the disease of the virus. How well does the proposed vaccine work? In the studies, did the proposed vaccine get consistent results from a large enough sample set, a large enough testing base? And finally, you know, what the potential side effects and the risk or the probability of getting those side effects are.
Yeah, so the cure shouldn't be worse than the disease, okay?
Yeah.
So it's when fear comes upon us, especially when it has to do with our family and our loved ones, it's human nature to say, oh, I will do whatever I can to protect them. I will do whatever it takes. In this case, guys, the best thing for them may not be the vaccine. The best thing for them might be to do a little research and homework and not give them the vaccine. Okay, but we don't know what category you are, but the data
shows. Everyone's situation is different.
It is. And, you know, we're not doctors. We might play one on TV, but.
You know, I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express once.
You stayed? There you go. That does it, you know. Free plug, you know. So in terms of risk reward, we need more data. Okay, producing the vaccine at quote warp speed unquote may be a good thing, but without data, you know, just enough information, the clinical results, meaning real world. Okay, we need to prove that it is safe and effective, and unless someone is in a very high risk category, there may actually. there are going to be unseen consequences. There always are. Okay. Drugs have been, in fact, here are a couple of examples right here. This is from Mercury News, 1 September 2020. Okay, back in 1955, it was April of 1955, the government announced the first vaccine to protect kids against polio. Within days, labs had made thousands of lots of the vaccine. Batches made by one company, it's called Cutter Labs, C-U-T-T-E-R, Cutter Labs, accidentally contained live polio virus and it caused an outbreak.
Now, Matt, when you say live virus, that's mm-hmm. to be distinguished from normally in vaccines, they put what, dead virus cells?
That's right. And because your body doesn't necessarily always distinguish between a live virus, you know, body or protein and a dead virus protein. So when your body interacts or encounters that vaccine with dead, virus proteins, it causes your body to express antibodies to fight the live virus. But in this case, the live virus, polio, actually somehow got into thousands of lots. So what happened is more than 200,000 children got the polio vaccine, but within days, the government had to abandon the program. I'll say that again. More than 200,000 children got the polio vaccine, but the government had to abandon the program in days. Eventually, 40,000 kids got polio. Now, think about that. Think about the parents who are, you know, it's, what was that, 75 years ago, 65, 75 years ago, who love their children no more than we do. And said, I'm going to do whatever I can. We're going to get this vaccine. You have to make it mandatory. I'm going to do whatever I can. Now, back then, it was truly terrifying. You know, one out of 20 or 25 kids will actually die. And, you know, about 4 out of 10, about 42%, will actually die or experience lifelong paralysis. That's terrifying. So people were getting in line. And all of a sudden, they realized they get a phone call or, you know, Tommy's just not walking straight or Tommy got really sick and what have you. 40,000 kids got polio. Some had low levels. A couple hundred were left with paralysis, and about 10 children died. Did they love their children any less than you? I doubt it. Again, a couple decades later, and this is from the Mercury News, same article. In 1976, scientists predicted a pandemic of a new strain of influenza, the flu, called the swine flu, okay? And understand this, guys. People have called the COVID a new virus, okay? It might be a new strain of a virus, but it's actually grandfather, if you will. It has been around for hundreds of years, okay? There are brand new. It's alive, okay? It's living. It's a virus, and it's a new strain, but there are already people who've had some strain of COVID. And some people are actually immune or have a powerful resistance to it. So, but basically, back in 76, they were concerned about a type of a swine flu. We've seen it in more recent years here, about 15 years ago. But President Ford was basically told by his advisors that, look, we have a pandemic flu coming called swine flu that may be as bad as the Spanish flu. Mind you, the Spanish flu killed 20 to 50 million people worldwide. 20 to 50 million people. That's what actually helped World War I come to a stop. They called it the Spanish flu because it was in all countries, and they wanted to blame it on Spain because Spain was kind of a neutral country during World War I. But President Ford made the decision to make the immunization compulsory, required, okay? And what did the government do? What do you think they did? They launched a program in about 7 months. How long has it been, Jason? So March, April, yeah, May, nine. June, July, August, September, October. About 8 months?
Yeah, 8-9 months.
There you go. Okay. 40 million people got vaccinated against the swine flu. 40 million, according to the Centers for Disease Control. That vaccine campaign was later linked to cases of a neurological disorder called Guillain-Barr syndrome, which can develop after an infection or rarely after vaccination with a live vaccine. In fact, in 1976, that swine flu was called the pandemic that never was. As it turned out, it never turned into pandemic proportions or levels or numbers. It just never did. They were just concerned it might. So leaders have a difficult job to do. That's why we put them there. In this case, they made a mistake. And I'll note here that even if someone does have a child that might develop some neurological disorder from a vaccine, it is extremely difficult to prove that it's from a vaccine. And even if it were, they can't fix it and they won't fix it. Okay?
Yeah. You mentioned government, you know, our leaders have an important job to do, but part of that job too is that they have to remember what is part of their job and what is not part of their job, right?
You know, amen.
We're not going to get into it in this episode, but the fact that a federal government plays a role in medical decisions or our medical history, not medical history, but our, you know, anything to do with our healthcare, that's a problem in and of itself. So they have to understand when they need to not be part of the problem and then just let the private sector be part of the solution.
That's right. And let us make the decisions, okay? Yeah. We are an independent thinking people. So is it worth the risk to take the vaccine? Are you low risk? What about your age, your health? Concerned about the fast production of the vaccine? We gave you two detailed examples there a minute ago. And it's a new vaccine, the message RNA, with very little data. So if what I do recommend is if you are considering it, that you get more data. Okay. And what do you call it when a person takes a medicine they don't need? I don't have the answer to that.
No, I don't know what you call that person, but you know, I think of the example of it, sometimes if I get a headache and I make a decision whether I'm going to take, in my case, I take ibuprofen, just works for me.
Ranger candy, baby. Ranger candy.
That's right. Yeah. So right. For me, it's, do I take, how bad is the headache? Am I, is it just a mild headache that's just kind of nagging at me, or is it debilitating? Right. And though that scale for me is how I make a decision about whether or not I'm going to introduce some foreign body, if you will, into me in order to fight that off. And if it's not bad, or I have a low risk of being debilitated, I'm probably not going to worry about it. But if it's affecting me, I'm going to take some ibuprofen. And while it's a different situation, the principle is exactly the same when we make decisions about vaccines. How likely am I to be have some major impact from this?
That's right. And what's interesting is that I've known a particular drug that was on the market. It's called, you know, Zocor. It was a statin. It went generic. And it had, of course, a risk profile, because I worked in cardiovascular health, pharmaceutical sales, and it was a very common statin used for cholesterol, and it was a very good statin. When it was used in combination with another drug, its use, because it was generic and cheap, people used it so high. And because the numbers of people using it increased, the number of major medical issues started to increase. So what the FDA had to do is they had to change the package insert, which basically means these are the side effect profile. This is what it does. This is the mechanism of action. So understand that in a small N value, which means number of participants in a small study, it won't capture a real world or clinical picture when you scope out to 100 million people. It's impossible. There is no perfect study, guys. Okay. And so science and medicine has its limitations. So understand there will be things that will come up with these vaccines that I think some of the even scientists will not have had, projected or even thought about. So, but there are also other considerations from a moral standpoint we are concerned with, the ingredients of the vaccines. Currently, there are six vaccine candidates, we call them, who are on the edge of approval. From my research, there are at least 54, that's 54, vaccines under development, including those six, okay? Two of those vaccines, one from AstraZeneca, also known as AZ, AZ, and Johnson & Johnson's Janssen, J-A-N-S-S-E-N, that's the vaccine company for Johnson & Johnson. They used aborted baby body parts in their vaccines. It's aborted fetal tissue is what it is. And the reason why, well, first of all, I don't agree with it, okay? But it's and you can look it up, you can research, and that comes from the AstraZeneca package insert, okay? As well as some other research we did. We'll put that on the website. But the reason why, basically it's a 14-week gestational age liver tissue. And the reason is because cells can only be cloned. Basically, I'm not going to go over how it's done right here. Basically, they clone it. And the younger the cell, the more cloning you can do. Okay, if there are ethical ways to obtain human tissue, and obviously getting it from an aborted baby is feeding something that Jason and I both agree is just wrong, right, on many levels. Okay, so we'll leave it at that. But the reason is that you can get this tissue to be used longer and longer and longer versus maybe a child that has died of natural causes, maybe a year old. Okay, so that's kind of the reason why some companies seek, you know, a 14-week-old gestational age fetal tissue versus maybe a human being that died from natural causes from a different age. So a little bit of science
regardless,
there.
Regardless, it almost doesn't, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter what the reason why they do it.
Yep.
That's just, you know, we're not going to, I know I speak for you too, but we're, yep, not going to participate in a vaccine that kind of rides on the back of murdering small children.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason. And here's something else. And this is kind of a alert. Okay. Janssen, J-A-N-S-S-E-N, is the company that makes it. Janssen is owned by Johnson & Johnson. I mean, we have three kids. Jason has three kids. And I remember putting Johnson & Johnson baby powder on our fannies after you change. I'm thinking, what? We love you. We love your babies too. I don't think so. I'll just leave it at that. Okay.
Yeah.
Obviously we're very passionate about this. So those two companies that we know, use fetal tissue obtained in an unethical manner. AstraZeneca and Janssen, which is a daughter company to Johnson & Johnson. Now, so here's another question. Based on what we've shared with you, do we need any COVID vaccine at all? It's a legitimate question, okay? Now, some of you are thinking, oh my gosh, you know, we're closing down. I don't even think they need to close down at all, at all. They don't, because the cure shouldn't be worse than the disease. A lot of people whose lives are being torn apart and destroyed because of these lockdowns, okay? So, but that said, it's a legitimate question. And for those of you who are pulling your hair out and saying, you know, rubbish, you shouldn't be saying these shutdowns are bad. They're good. Let's bring it down to earth here a little bit. And this is from LifeSiteNews.com. LifeSiteNews.com. Okay. This is Dr. Mike Yeardon. Okay. He is from Pfizer. Okay. Retired with Pfizer. He's the former vice president and chief scientist for allergy and respiratory. And he was the number one guy. You couldn't go any higher than he did. He worked in there for 30 years. He is the expert of experts in vaccine research, okay? Okay, this is a quote. There is, quote, no need for vaccines. The pandemic is over. This is from the guy who made the vaccines, okay? Now, Dr. Yeardon also states that there are many viruses that already exist, which have been around for years, that are related to COVID, including the common cold, okay, that people are already immune to and are already immune or resistant to COVID. Okay, in fact, statistically, the average child gets about 10 colds a year. It's just why I don't need a source for that. I've just learned that. And you know, we often try to
quote. Because we have kids.
Well, that is a statistic. And the average adult gets two, okay? But that's our body's immune system getting stronger, all right? So so think about that. About 30% of the population are already immune or resistant to COVID. Think about that. For example, 40% of children are resistant to COVID, rarely do we hear of a child losing his or her life from COVID. It's extremely rare. And that's why you got the survivor rate is 99.999%. There's a reason for that. So his science makes sense. Here's another quote from Dr. Yeardon again. Remember, the former number one vaccine guy at Pfizer, one of the big pharma companies in the world. Quote, there is absolutely no need for vaccines to extinguish the pandemic. I've never heard such nonsense talked about vaccines. You do not vaccinate people who aren't at risk from a disease. I guess he answered my question. What do you call a person who takes medicine that they don't need? Okay. And then once again, that's from Dr. Mike Yeardon, Pfizer's former vice president and chief science for allergy and respiratory. It'll be on our show notes. So what if you do if you were a person who's 70 years old with diabetes and heart disease and you're concerned about it? Okay. I could understand why you'd say, hey, listen, Matt, I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to take a vaccine. I understand it should be your choice. Okay. Now, if you're 40 years old and you have three kids, should you, your spouse, and your kids get the vaccine? Data show that males under the age of 30 have a greater chance of dying in a car accident than they do from COVID. Why add more risk to that young person's life by giving them a COVID vaccine?
Yeah.
Okay. So why not wait? We're not saying you should or shouldn't take it, but why not wait? Why not wait for data? Wait to hear more about the side effects.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's polio, right? I mean, it's not like there's an imminent and urgent effect of the disease, right? That's very likely to happen.
It's not polio. In fact, if anybody asks you, you know, we're not going to get the vaccine, you say, hey, man, it's not polio. We're 42% of the population that got it either died or were permanently paralyzed for life. Okay. Right. So, but I got a question for you. Will vaccines be required?
Yeah. I think first we have to give it a little bit of context, right? Because the term that is thrown around is this concept of mandatory, right? So what does mandatory mean? Some of us might think of mandatory as, hey, I'm going to physically strap you down and inject you with something. That would be considered mandatory. I may say, hey, if you don't take this vaccine, I'm going to lock you up. You know, that would, I would say that probably considered mandatory too. So we're probably not going to cover too much of those right now, because most of us, that rational thinking human beings, would say that if I'm in control of what happens with my body, then you're not going to tell me, you know, how to do that, right? It, you know, we'll get into this in later episodes. You know, the Fifth and the 14th Amendment, they guarantee that, you know, we cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. And I would submit to you that this certainly is qualifies as being deprived of liberty, the freedom to decide what happens and what goes into my own body. So we're not going to really talk about that physical threat or the threat of being locked up too much, other than to say that that's not the government's role, nor do they have the authority to do that. So the other kinds of mandatory are the social or the economic pressures. You know, this can come in the form of, you know, being shunned or ridiculed on, you know, social media or even in person, right? People say, oh, you're not taking the vaccine. Well, shame on you. You are, you're going to make me get it, and you're going to endanger the rest of the population. I saw this on Facebook today on somebody responding to some tweet or a Facebook post. So, yes, we may face some of that, that kind of pressure.
You know what, Jason?
Yeah.
Of all the influences, what you just described, you know, being shunned on Facebook, I meant Facebook, I meant really Facebook, is that soft compellment, that soft coercion has the biggest impact in any society. You know, whether it's, you know, shaming or, well, everybody's doing it, why don't you?
That's right. We want to be like everyone else. Or that's a natural thing. So the other kinds of the pressures that we will face may be, you know, kind of commercial, economic pressures. You know, not being allowed into stores or restaurants. Maybe not being able to take certain kinds of transportation. You know, planes, trains, taxis, Uber. And probably the most relevant, significant one, maybe, you know, whether or not you're allowed to work for an employer if you don't have the vaccine.
Oh, yeah.
So that begs the question, how is either the government or one of these private entities even going to know if we had the vaccine? Well, there's actually, I know, don't shoot the messenger, on CNN.
Uh-oh.
I know. They actually did have a story, and this is where I first saw this, at least, where they're going to issue vaccine cards. And so, you know, there was a doctor that they were interviewed, Dr. Kelly Moore of the Immunization Action Coalition. It's basically a nonprofit that works with the CDC. She says, you know, quote, everyone will receive the card to make it easier to track the vaccine's distribution. Everyone will receive a written card that they can put in their wallet that will tell them what they had and when their next dose is due. Right.
Okay, lemmings. Okay, sheep. Robots, go. It's so problematic.
Cue the German accent. Papers, please.
Oh gosh.
Right.
Goodness gracious.
Not to get too tinfoily, but you know, it's just another step that in the progression to make sure that it can be controlled and monitored. You know. Mm-hmm. You know. What about our kids getting the vaccine? You know, in the District of Columbia, you know, obviously Washington, D.C., they created a bill. It's called B23-0171, which basically permits a minor child of 11 years and older to give their consent. So no longer it's the parents' obligation or requirement, but an 11-year-old can give consent to any vaccine that's recommended without the parents' knowledge. Right. So, and that, you know, we'll have a link to that on the PatriotCoalitionLive.com site as well.
Wow, that is crazy. So having shared information with you about the 4 points, risk category, how well the vaccine works, consistent study results, and side effects. Okay. Now I will tell you, my family and I, we're not going to get the COVID vaccine. We're not in a big risk category. If we take it statistically, it is more likely we'll experience a serious side effect than have any problem with COVID, okay?
And now, it's the same for my family, by the way. We're the same reasons.
Yeah, 24 and 25, hey, you know, we're healthy. I'm in my 40s, okay? So, and plus, I need more safety and data. And like the doctor said from Pfizer, you know, there is no pandemic. Now, I don't understand why they're pushing it so hard. You know, another lockdown. You know, the survival rate is very high. We have great therapeutics. We know whom the virus attacks most vigorously. And it's elderly with multiple comorbidities. Okay. I am not either. So, you know, we're responsible enough, we Americans are responsible enough to know about this virus and how we should behave in our daily habits and daily activity. I do not need to be shut down. America does not need to be shut down. The cure should not be worse than the disease, okay?
Yeah.
So so I won't take the vaccine that has been produced on aborted fetal tissue, and I need more data. So
yeah, no, it's the same for our family as well. These are the decisions that we've made for the same reasons.
Yeah. So what are we really talking about? Okay, so we're not talking about whether you should or should not get the vaccine, but really my biggest concern is some government or entity, or you know, is going to force me to take the vaccine. I want it to be my prerogative and my choice. Okay.
Yep. No, so you have to think about, so what if you choose not to take the vaccine for you or your children, and someone compels you to? Then where does that leave us? Well,
this is important. This is important, folks.
It is. So there's two things, right? There's a government answer to this, and then there's a private entity answer like this, you know, like your employer or something like that. So what if a government or private entity like your employer, they make a mandatory in their jurisdiction or whatever their sphere of influence is? What does that mean? So first of all, you have to know your rights. And we talked about this, you know, if it's the government side, you know, the Fifth, the 14th Amendments, the, you know, you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. Mm-hmm. That means, you know, jury of your peers. So no one can do that. So, you know, that we have to also consider there, you know, the prosecution in front of a jury is different than just one person saying, yeah, you've got to do this.
That's right.
So how do we preempt mandatory vaccines? Well, we have to take a stand now. We have to tell people, look, right, don't buy into the hype. You can't force people to do things to their bodies that they don't want to do, you know. You know, as Matt said, you really got to beware of fake book. There's a lot of pressure out there to do this.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And most people, I think that, and we're influenced too by fake book pressure. I mean, you go in there and I just get, you know, I'm there for 5 minutes. I laugh at my friend's stuff and I get kind of, you know, angry and frustrated. Like, that's a bunch of spin. You know, it's kind of like if you have, you know, Apple News, which is Apple Spin, you know, it's incredible. So Jason, help us out here. Okay. What can we do to prevent from being forced, or perhaps a better word is compelled, to take this vaccine?
Yeah. So let's really quick recap kind of the different situations. You know, you mm-hmm. could maybe not be allowed into stores or restaurants. You could maybe mm-hmm. potentially lose your job. You could not be allowed in transportation, you know, planes, taxis, et cetera. And then of course, schools too, your kids may be denied school. So how do we fight against kind of this quote unquote mandatory vaccines, in terms of social and economic pressure? Well, the first thing is we have to make sure that our elected officials know what their role is and what the role is not. Mm-hmm. So like anything, it's better to be done in numbers. So if you've got 10 or 20 friends, as many as you can, you talk with your mm-hmm. your elected officials, your senators, your congressional delegation, state legislators, school boards, mm-hmm. city councils, and ask them the question, preferably in person, so they know that it's important to you. But if you have to, then by phone or email. But ask this question: will you oppose any and all efforts to make vaccines mandatory, right? It doesn't matter what version of mandatory they're defining it as, but this puts them in the position where they have to give a yes or no. And you should expect a yes or no answer, an unequivocal yes or no answer. Yeah.
And guys, understand that Jason ran for U.S. Congress in the great state of Texas, okay? And even though he didn't win, man, you understand where this is coming from. This is from a gentleman, my friend, who has been working in the political realm for 16 years and has dedicated a big part of his life. So that one sentence right there, will you oppose any and all efforts to make vaccines mandatory? I actually asked him, Jason, what sentence can we use? He goes, this is what you got to say. So there is experience behind this. He has engaged many different politicians, and my prayer is that he will be one someday and he will do great things for America and for Texas, if you're still living there. I think you're not going to move out of Texas. But I mean, you guys get 10 to 20 of your friends to do this in a joint effort. You will make an impact in your community. Yep. I mean, one that will really bless people.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. So that's on the general government side. But also we have mm-hmm. to talk about schools. And that is, you know, if you send your kids to school and then they say, papers, please. You know, they want to see this vaccine card that says you've been vaccinated. You have to let them know, look, we're not going to do this. We conscientiously object. We have religious exemption mm-hmm. or we have religious issues with this, whatever it happens to be. But you tell them in no uncertain terms, no, my kids are not going to be vaccinated for that. And the laws vary from state to state as to what the schools can allow. But in almost, I think, every case that I know of, every school is reimbursed for the number of students that are sitting in a seat yep. on any given day.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you tell them, you know, you can kick my son out, or I'm going to pull him out, or my daughter, whatever, mm-hmm. they're not going to get paid for that. And you'll just have to figure out, are you going to homeschool? Are you going to send them to private school? But, you know, I have it on my wall here in my office. My favorite unofficial motto is principles only mean something if you stick to them when it's inconvenient. And certainly pulling your kids out of school, homeschooling, you know, paying extra money for that, it's inconvenient. Yeah. But if this is important to you, if this is a choice that you're willing to make, or, then that's what you have to do. Okay, so that's how we would deal with the a kind of a government entity trying to make a vaccine mandatory. What about the, mm-hmm. the commercial side? What about businesses? Well, before they make vaccines, quote unquote, mandatory, mm-hmm. you want to encourage all the business owners that you're in touch with to mm-hmm. oppose you know, any sort of mandatory vaccine and stay open without any restrictions, right? Have them. I mean, they're ultimately in control. They've got to make the decisions that's best for their family. But if they know that enough people out there mm-hmm. are willing to patronize their business, despite not having those restrictions in place, it gives mm-hmm. them a little bit more of inspiration to do that and to take a stand. So before this happens, you ought to tell them, hey, do whatever you can, stay open, don't make anything mandatory. In fact, I've taken it upon myself anytime I go in a place that doesn't normally get tips, let's say, I don't know, a place that's not sit down, they don't serve you, and they don't hassle me about wearing a mask, even though their door says it, I give them an extra tip and I tell them, this is because you didn't hassle me about a mask. So they understand that people are willing to come in there.
Yeah, Jason, go. Right? There we go.
So that's what happens before they make something mandatory. Uh-huh. But, you know, one, or before a vaccine comes out. But once a vaccine mm-hmm. comes out, mm-hmm. then just, you know, you don't want to, you want the business to tell them, don't require it. Don't give in to all of this pressure. And if they do require the vaccine, or you show your card if you're to be let in there, stand up to mm-hmm. them. It's just like any bully, right? Pop them in the nose. Say, hey, look, you know, we're not going away. Obviously, I'm not telling you to beat up your local proprietor.
Don't do that.
Right? But just like any bully, you got to let them know that, oh, no, I'll do whatever you say. Say, no, I'm not going to patronize. I'm not going to come to your business, spend my money with you. I'm going to mm-hmm. go take it somewhere where they're not going to hassle me about that. And if you've ever owned a business or you know somebody who has, you know that means a big deal to people, at least if you're a small business, right? The big businesses, yeah. they're going to push from the top down and they're going to do whatever it takes to push their political agenda, okay? So that's on the kind of the commercial side. And then the last kind of category is your job, your employer. Before vaccines come out, you need to tell your employer that you want to work there, first of all, mm-hmm. that, you know, this isn't about you not wanting to work. You want to keep your job, but you did not agree in your current employment contract to submit to some sort of test or vaccine in order to be admitted into your facility or to your job. Unless, of course, you did sign that. And then, of course, you don't really have that recourse. Yeah. But if it's not in your current employment agreement, or you don't have an agreement mm-hmm. and you don't have any sort of verbal agreement with your employer, you let them know that, hey, I didn't agree to that. I chose to work for you before that happened. Now, after the vaccine comes out, if you're now going to make me sign a new agreement, I'm not going to sign the agreement. And now you, Mr. Employer, have a decision to make. Do you want to fire me for not signing the new agreement, or do you want to make an exception? Now, if they fire you, then we're at the last recourse, and that is, mm-hmm. depending on what employment law is in your state, you may have grounds for, you know, some sort of legal suit. And again, this is about punching a bully in the nose. You have to let them know that you're not going to give in to something just because I'm at a loss for words here. Just because 99.997 people live, I'm mm-hmm. not going to stand for that. And so this is where you make your stand. So for that employer, you just let them know, I didn't sign an agreement that says that I'm not going to. I really want to work here, and I will continue to work here. And if you make me sign a new agreement, you're going to have to fire me because I won't sign it. And then you find a way to take them to court.
In fact, a place they can go, if any of you are ever in this fight, go to Liberty Council, and their website is www.lc.org. That's lc.org, Liberty Council. They provide pro bono, no cost, legal counsel in situations like these. And that's why we like to give to them, because they protect life. They protect the Constitution, and they help causes like this. So some of you may encounter this. I pray you don't, that we can preempt this wherever we live.
Yeah.
But someone has to walk the line, and someone has to fight the fight. Both Jason and I have been in the military, and we put ourselves on the line, and we were ready to, as best we knew how, to be in the spot when we got there. Well, some of you are going to be there. And when it does, lc.org is a place that you can go to. So,
yeah. And that person that stands in the gap doesn't always need to be somebody else. And that's, I talked about this one in our first episode. You know, one of the reasons why it caused me to join the military was I started asking this question: why does it always have to be somebody else's son or daughter? Why does it have to be somebody else that goes in the military and defends us? Why doesn't everybody do this? And so, you know, don't just sort of expect somebody else is going to be the one to give the extra tip and say, this is for not hassling me, or that stands up and tells a business, hey, I'm going to leave and go somewhere else. So it's up to all of us. Okay. So let's kind of summarize and wrap up. You know, this has been a great episode. It's been, you know, fascinating getting into some of these details, but what we've talked to you about today is really, at its core, it should be your individual choice whether or not you get a vaccine for you and your children. It doesn't need to be mandatory, and we ought to fight against it being mandatory. Mm-hmm. But as important is, in order to make your decision, let's find out what those risk categories that you have that are in there, mm-hmm. in order to help you make a decision. Are you old? Are you young? Do you have comorbidities? These are the things that you need to know. What are the data elements behind it? Has the data and the studies, have they been done in a consistent manner and give consistent mm-hmm. results? And so we kind of helped you give you a little bit of a rubric, if you will, a way to help you make a decision about whether this might be right for you. And, you know, I'll tell you, you know, like Matt said, you know, we've looked at all these factors. We both come to the same conclusion. We're not willing for ourselves to take this vaccine, knowing what our risk factors is, knowing what those factors are in our families, knowing mm-hmm. the immoral practices that some of the vaccine manufacturers are using. So we've kind of given you our viewpoints. You've kind of gotten an inside glimpse, as scary as it is, into our brains and our thought processes. And so I also, Matt, I just want to thank you very much for bringing your expertise in, you know, your experience from working in pharmaceutical sales. It's been invaluable. And so I'm sure our audience really appreciates as well. So thank you for that.
Appreciate that, Jason. I think the quote of the day goes to you, though. It's not polio. You know, it's not polio, where 42% either die or experience lifelong paralysis of some sort. So
yeah, I feel like we're in an alternate universe, you know, knowing that that's in fairly recent history, that we are to a point where people are walking around in masks and talking about getting vaccinated.
Driving in masks in the car.
Oh, so here's, okay. So
oh my gosh.
A friend of mine on Facebook sent me something about, I saw a person riding a motorcycle with a mask on and no helmet. Think about that.
That's it, man. Oh, if you should take a picture on that and put it on Facebook. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. What, so
countless it's like memes.
An alternate universe that we're talking about having a vaccine.
A mask
for something.
And no helmet.
Yeah. Anyways.
That's hilarious. I'd love to see the meme for that. So thank you, Jason. Great work today. So folks, please share this podcast. There was a lot of information we put into here. Of all the people I researched with, including some providers, some other friends in the field of pharmaceutical sales, a lot of other educated folks, none of them had all the information that we brought you here today, as long as kind of the wrap session between Jason and me. So there's a lot of information here. I haven't seen anything necessarily like this altogether, but please pass it out, okay? Continue to educate yourself. Like Jason said, I quote him already, this is not polio, man, okay? I think 42%, this is not, okay? So you might want to listen to this podcast again. There's a lot of data and a lot of information we put out on here. We were trained that it takes a person to talking to a physician seven, you have to give them the same message seven times for them to start to get it. There's a lot of social media pressure out there, TV pressure out there, get the vaccine, get, and they will play the, don't kill my grandmother. You're not getting the vaccine. You're killing my grand. That's false. That's false.
Yeah. Well, Jason, Matt, I'm just going to interrupt real quick. So, and we're going to make it easy for you too. We're going to get all the sources that we cited. Yes. We're going to get those up on our show notes. If you go to patriotcoalitionlive.com.
There we go. Thank you. And already in England and on British TV, they've got kids, you know, on commercials basically or talk shows and playing dolls. I don't like you. You didn't take the Pfizer vaccine and throwing that doll away. I mean, come on, man. How so, but anyway, it's just not right. So, but anyway, so it was a great, great episode. Thank you, Jason. Please go to patriotcoalitionlive.com for more information. Patriotcoalitionlive.com. Your support monthly is a big help. patriotcoalitionlive.com/support. Please give us a 5-star rating on where you do get your podcast, like Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you have any questions or topics you'd like for us to address, please go to our website and leave a question there. And with that, I'll say thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone. We will see you later.